the one rare episode where all of us are 17 fans.
17.
Oh, Sasha, you're a, I didn't know, Lauren. She kept this from us.
Sure, I'm like looking at my desk to see if I have any 17 artifacts. The closest thing I have is I have a Subin photo card, but that's a whole different band. I'm trying to look at my K-pop stuff.
Not the artifact.
I'm like a June Mingyu bias. It's a day-to-day.
Mingyu, of course. You know, it's
Sarah's flip-flop. I love a tall man. I love a domestic man.
But actually, it was funny because my first, I feel like, few interactions with Sasha was 17 related. We went to a full-ass concert together.
Yeah, that's when I met you.
Yes. Yeah, that's when I think we met in person. And it was just wonderful. And then when she signed one of my books, it was June's Sister Wife.
I love that. Because
we're going to share him.
Yeah. I'm from Utah.
Welcome back, everybody. We are your three favorite book besties. My name is Lauren.
My name is Carlos.
And I'm Rose. And we have a very special author guest today.
My name is Sasha Payton Smith. I am the New York Times bestselling author of The Witch Haven and The Witch Hunt, and I have a forthcoming duology with HarperCollins coming out in February of 2025 called The Rose Bargain, and I'm really excited to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Yay! Of course. Yes, 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 yes,
We're
yes.
so excited. Like, thank you.
Yes.
Today, we are going to introduce our book taste through five books that we would kind of recommend and kind of summarize what we like in our books.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like represent us.
Yes.
In a way.
Should we have our special guest go first?
I think we should. And she's very organized also.
I've got a Word document. I've been in research all day.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, you're so prepared.
My notes. Okay, so I'm starting with the most simple category, I think, and then it'll get a little bit more esoteric as we move through the categories. But I think the first book that would represent my taste would be Marrying Winterbourne by Lisa Claypass. It's a Regency romance. I love a Regency romance novel. Ooh. I love a romance with like a woman in a prom dress on a cover and like a hunky man looming behind her. I love just like a straight up historical romance novel. So I'm including in this umbrella Tessa Dare, Julia Quinn, Beverly Jenkins. I love a capital R romance novel.
Love that. So have you read all of Bridgerton then?
I've read all of Bridgerton. And I like Julia Quinn a lot, but Lisa Claypass, who's actually her best friend and writing partner, Lisa Claypass is my jam.
Oh.
All respect to Julia. I love the Bridgerton books too, but those Lisa Claypass books like really scratch my brain in a way that no other Regency romance series has. Her research is impeccable. Her heroines are funny. Her heroes are so swoony. They're always like a little bit goofy. One of my favorite romance heroes is Derek Craven, and he was canonically born in a gutter. And like they really and they don't let you forget it. Like they don't let you forget that he was born in a gutter. And he's like, "How could I possibly love you, a beautiful woman of the ton? I was born in a gutter." And you're like, "How could you overcome this?"
Wait, I love that.
They're so fun. They're so funny. I think I've read all of them at this point. Any Lisa Claypass book is like you're in for the ride of your life.
And I've really been wanting to get into something like that because we did an episode on the Bromance Book Club, and within the first book of that they're reading a Regency romance, and mm-hmm. I was honestly loving that story more than this current like the actual Bromance Book Club aspect. So I think I need to just, that's like the one part of romance that I've never actually dove into minus the first Bridgerton book, so I think I need to give that a shot.
They are my favorite. With Lisa, I would recommend either starting with the Wallflowers series, which is her series from kind of like late 90s early 2000s, or her Ravenel's series, which is her most recent series. And like the Bridgerton books, they all Wallflowers book is a series of best friends, and then the Ravenel's is a family, but they're all like within the same universe, so the same characters keep coming back. You see how their relationships evolve. It's really fun.
Okay, I'm sold.
Yeah.
I'm so... Carlos?
Oh, I'm next? Okay.
I'm just so intrigued to see your list because I feel like I know your book taste really well. And so I'm so curious.
I was making guesses on what was going to be on your list.
I feel like everything that's on my list, you guys are going to be like, okay, yeah, duh. Like, obviously he would do that. But for my very first one, I'm going to go with the most obvious, which is Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah.
Mistborn, yeah. What did I tell you? I said, I bet Mistborn is going to be on his list number one.
So obviously love Brandon Sanderson, but I didn't go with The Way of Kings because I feel like I wouldn't be able to read too many epic fantasies. So I decided to go with Mistborn since it's just a trilogy. So I love trilogies, first of all, especially in fantasy. And the thing I love most about Mistborn is the heist aspect, where it's just a group of people getting together and they all have like different specialties, I guess you can say. And like they use that to like take down or whatever they're doing. That's like my favorite part about Mistborn. So any book that has like a heist aspect, like Six of Crows, I also really liked. I just don't love Leigh Bardugo's writing, but yeah.
I just love a ragtag group of people going on a quest. That's just like, oh. That's
so good.
Book number one, I did The House Witch.
So cute. Ooh.
I actually don't know how to pronounce this. Delamock? Delamock?
Sounds about right.
It kind of gave the same vibe as like... oh my God, what's that Travis Baldry, like Legends and Lattes kind of a vibe where it's just super cozy, still set in like a kingdom, very like medieval, but like, I don't know, the main character is just so sassy, witty, and yeah, that's going to be my numero uno.
Mine is actually kind of similar. Mine is Half a Soul by Olivia Atwater. Like, I love that book. Also, my list is going to be, it's like, this is all my taste and defines me. And it's going to be like, what, girl? But Half a Soul is just the sweetest book ever. It follows Theodora. She's so quirky. She only has half a soul. She's not like other girls, but like in a good way. And it has a little romance, but it's only like a taste of romance. And there's like low fantasy. It's a little bit Regency era. So I feel like it's just the perfect book. I just love it. Like, I think about it every week. I love it.
And that
much.
One's a trilogy, right?
Trilogy? Yes and no. They're all like interconnected standalones. So you don't necessarily have to read each one of them. It doesn't continue the next one's story. But it has some like characters from other stories, like side characters. It's just in the same world.
Arguably, this might be your most normal book on your list.
Yeah. Probably my most normal book. I wanted to start.
I can already imagine.
Next is Meat Grinder by. oh my gosh. Okay. Sasha, what's your number two?
Okay. My second is A Great and Terrible Beauty by Libba Bray, which is the umbrella I have dubbed historical fantasy with a strong feminist bent. So Emily Wilde, Lovely War, mm-hmm. Kind of Divine Rivals, The Diviners, Beautiful by Renee Adier. Is the umbrella here. I think that my own work, The Witch Haven and The Witch Hunt, definitely fall into this category. I love historical fantasy. I've always loved historical fantasy. I met Libba Bray at a book festival years ago when I was querying The Witch Haven. I don't think I had an agent yet. And she was so sweet. And now having done signings, like I know that I was probably insane to her. But I was like, oh, your book's a witch. I'm also writing a book and my book's about witches. And she was like, the coolest person in the world. She's like even cooler than you imagine her to be. And she signed my like bedraggled high school copy of A Great and Terrible Beauty to Sasha, may your witches bring you much magic. And if I had to save one object in a fire, it would be that. So I love her as a person, but also those books. Like, I think especially I was in high school in like 2007 to 2010, and there were not a lot of books then where girls got to be like truly angry. I feel like those are a little bit more common now, but that was the first one that kind of like cracked my brain right open to like female rage.
Right. And would you say that this is probably one of your like favorite genres?
Big time. Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. even just within your writing, like I can tell that you love this genre specifically, and you do so much research. Like, mm-hmm. I know you just got back from a research trip in England, but like, it bleeds through. So I wanted you to know that, and I love
that. Thank you. I did I did a lot of research for The Witch Haven. The Rose Bargain, it takes place in a Victorian England that's been ruled by a fairy queen for 400 years.
Oh,
and
I
so
love
I
that.
Let myself off the hook a little bit for that one, where I feel like I have some level of deniability that I'm like, the fashion's different because that's what the fairy queen wears.
Yeah. She's a dictator. Come on.
But I had a lot of fun, actually. My favorite research in the Rose Bargain is canonically, so the premise of the book is it's about debutantes in this Victorian kind of Bridgerton-esque England, and they all go, and every citizen in England gets one opportunity to make a bargain with the fairy queen. So all the debutantes show up, all the fancy girls, and on their coming out day, they curtsy in front of the queen and they make their bargain. And when our main character shows up to make her bargain, the queen announces that this is the season her son will take a wife. And that in order to be considered to be his bride, you must sign a contract saying you will never marry another. But our main character's in cahoots with his brother, who has his own motivations. And he's like, well, I'll make you my brother's dream girl. This is perfect. We'll all get what we want.
Ooh.
But what I had fun is the queen tricked her way onto the throne during the War of the Roses 400 years before. And so I got to research what happened 400 years before that I cannot change. Like, I had to call Priam the Prince of Wales because that title existed pre-War of the Roses. It was like this very, sorry, this is like very in the weeds to my research process. But like figuring out like what existed in medieval England was very interesting to me. I love a research trip.
I love that.
That was a big sidebar.
I mean, I love it. I love hearing about like future projects. It makes me like kick my feet. I'm so excited.
I'm like deep into Rosebargain land right now. So that's what's taking up a lot of my mental space.
Send me all the mood boards. I love a mood board.
Oh my gosh, I've
Spotify
got them.
List.
I'm plotting book two. It's all happening.
Yes. Yeah. Carlos, what's your second book?
My second book is one we actually did on the podcast, and it was my last pick. I actually have it right here. Blood Over Brighthaven.
Oh, okay.
I love a good dark academia. I love when, obviously, when it touches on themes of religion and morality, and when we see the main characters kind of go crazy a little bit. And this book has all of that. And that's why I picked it for the podcast, the last episode we did.
Is there another dark academia that you would recommend that would be similar to Blood Over Brighthaven? Because I know a lot of people loved that episode and they probably want something similar.
Well,
like me.
It's very similar to Babel and the themes that it, it touches on. But the magic system is very different and the main characters are also very different. So it's like a good, it's a good, you get like two different spectrums of dark academia, I would say.
Love that.
Yeah, that's my number two pick.
My book number two is The Final Girl Support Group by Grady Hendrix. My book taste just really is so broad. So I'm going to use this one to represent more of like, yeah, the mystery thriller, touch of horror. Because I think this is technically shelved in horror.
Yeah, technically horror. Grady Hendrix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say maybe I'm just desensitized from like all the crazy shit that we've read horror-wise, like extreme horror-wise.
Extreme horror is crazy.
Is this even that horrific? But yeah, I guess it's just like baby horror. Well, not baby horror, not like babies. Like
different episode.
Yeah, that's a different episode. You guys know what I mean. Lighter horror?
Yeah, lighter.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, my turn. Yep. So my next book, I feel like it's also like kind of normal. The Last Housewife by Ashley Winstead. Also a book that I talk about as being my favorite book because – so it's thriller. I wouldn't definitely – I mean, there is a mystery part to it, but like it's very, very fast-paced. I love a fast-paced thriller. I love a female main character. It has a podcast element, which I love. It has dual timeline. I love dual timeline. And it – I wouldn't say that it's an unreliable narrator, but it's a narrator that is not telling us everything. So I guess she is a little unreliable, but like she does open up to the audience a little bit throughout. Insane plot twist. There's a cult involved. Like it's literally perfect. And I feel like that just sums up what I like.
You love a cult.
I love a cult.
Oh my gosh. All right. Sasha,
Okay, my next umbrella is what I'm calling Monster of the Week Romantasy. And my example book for this is my old favorite, Twilight. We almost did a whole episode just talking about Twilight, so I feel like I had to shout it out. I was like an early Twilight adopter. I was at my parents' house like a couple months ago, and I pulled my childhood copy of Twilight off the shelf, and it was a first edition, first printing of a hardback. And I was like, I was early on this. I remember going like girl to girl at my eighth grade lunch table and being like, have you heard the joyful news of Edward Cullen? Like, I love.
Have you heard of our Lord and Savior?
Oh my God. Like, I was like, I just found out what love is, and it's this. I'm 13 and I'll never be the same.
Oh my gosh.
But I love a big, flashy, you know, commercial romance. I love, you know, The Fourth Wings, The Sarah J. Masses. I put Cruel Prince, Wings of Ebony, Jade Fire Gold in here. I love just like a big, sparkly, giant world where the stakes are like, you know, is the world going to be burnt down? And that feels just as important to me as, but are they going to kiss?
Right.
That's Lauren. Oh my gosh.
Like, at the end of the day, God, I don't really care about like the door that lets demons in, as long as like, you guys are making out in front of it.
Big sparkly world, big sparkly man. I mean,
yep.
What could be better?
The hunkier than the hunkiest man you've ever seen.
Yes.
I think I took one big writing lesson away from Fourth Wing, which is just that I can constantly remind my readers how hot my male love interest is. I was like, oh, wait, I just keep reminding them that he's hot. And I did that in Rosebarken, and I had so much fun just being like, also, by the way, this guy's a huge hunk.
It was so funny because my husband is currently reading Fourth Wing, and he's like,
how's that going?
It's a process. It's a process.
My husband loved Fourth Wing.
See, like, Ryan just loves, like, a dry memoir. Like, he loves nonfiction. So this is really different and new for him. So he's like, oh my God, Violet just keeps saying how hot this, like, dude is. I'm like,
yeah. That's my favorite part.
I know. I'm like, if only you were in my head in high school. Like, literally, it was just like, oh, gotta go to math class. Wow, he's good looking. Like,
it's the most realistic part about being at Dragon Murder College is if there's a hot guy there, that is more important than the murder dragons.
Exactly.
There was a tweet that I think about all the time that was like, there's no horror I couldn't survive if I had a crush on somebody there. That's Violet at Dragon College.
Literally.
I will survive for him.
Yeah.
Or like a zombie apocalypse. I'm like, as long as I find some like strange man that I'm attracted to, I'll probably be okay. Like, yep. Like, I will live for him. Not myself.
The Host by Stephanie Meyer. I'll include that in this category.
Oh, that's my God.
Deeply underrated.
And then it's important to note, you said that you were Team Jacob, though, right? For Twilight.
I am notoriously and publicly Team Jacob.
Me too.
Relatable.
It's my worst opinion. I get it. I get why people are mad at me about it. I agree with them. I can't help it. The heart wants what the heart wants. And he was her soulmate. Edward just should have died of the Spanish flu. And I'm sorry.
I agree.
And like rereading the books as an adult, I'm like, Edward is a walking red flag. I mean, not that Jacob is, you know, not.
But also she was like flirting with him to get information, you know, like leading him on.
She was manipulating him, and also like he had the deniability of being a teenage boy. Like, it's shitty to kiss your best friend. He's 17 years old. Edward Cullen is a full adult.
Yeah, hundreds of years old.
I get, like, I am the ultimate Twilight stan. Like, I love Twilight. I could not get through Midnight Sun because I was like, oh, this does not work from his perspective.
No,
it doesn't work the other way around.
I want to eat her, and I'm like, chill, just relax.
Oh my God, he wanted to murder her so bad.
I can't pitch in. I've never watched or read the books.
You should at the very least watch the movies. They're...
I've seen clips, like the cringy ones.
It's a good weekend.
So they were actually showing Twilight in theaters recently, and so I saw it in theaters, and obviously I haven't had that experience since it came out, because when it came out I did see it in theaters, and it was just like, I just felt like I was transformed back to like premiere week of Twilight. Like, it was just, it just does not compare to rewatching it on TV. Watching it at the movie theater and like having everyone around, I was like, this is a great experience. I love it.
Those books captured like the ultimate teenage fantasy, which was being noticed. Like, that's what she captured. It's like walking into a new school and having the hottest guy there be like, hey, what's your deal? It did that in a way I have never read since, and having read that as a teenager and had it like light my body on fire, like, it was art.
A smile has not left my face since we started talking about Twilight. Like, it hurts. Twilight needed its moment. Thank you for giving it its moment.
We had to.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, Carlos. Please, I would love to.
No. So, completely changing the genre. My next pick is The Shadow of the Gods by John Gwynne.
There's a theme here. There's a bit of a theme here.
Yeah, all my books are fantasy. But this one specifically I love because it's Viking fantasy, and there's also gods that are involved, as it says in the name. It's basically a world where there was a fight between gods 300 years ago, and their bones were scattered throughout the land, and now there's groups of people that are trying to bring them back and like gather the bones together. But there's also descendants of the gods that have their powers, but they're kind of slaves. And it's like, it's this whole epic fantasy thing. But it's really good. I love the Vikings. I love like all the murder. I also just realized that all my books have female main characters.
Oh.
Yeah. I was not expecting that. But yeah. This has three main characters. Two of them are female. And they're like super badass. And they just like murder everybody. It's so good.
I love that.
That is my third pick.
You're just supporting the girlies.
Yeah, of course. Oh, actually, can I mention my bonus pick for this, like right after this?
Yes.
So it's a manga, but I wanted to mention it because it's also Vikings. I have the deluxe edition, but it's Vinland Saga.
Oh, that's yeah. Very you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's also Vikings, but this one's a little more political, and there's not really any fantasy elements. Like some of the characters are like strong, like super strong, where they really shouldn't be if it was realistic. But I think what really gets me about this one is the politics and the story you follow with the main character from when he's little to like him wanting revenge. And then when he grows up and realizes like life isn't all about revenge. It's just such a good, like it rounds everything out so well.
Love that.
So yeah, that is my bonus pick as well.
I'm in a very Viking mood after my book.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You should do it. And then let me know what you think.
Switching gears completely, we are gonna do Her Orc Warrior.
Ooh. Ma'am. Say more. I mean, I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised.
So this is gonna be, oh yeah, by Zoe Ashwood. This is my representation for like my monster smut that I just eat up like nobody's business, okay? Mm-hmm. If you don't know what nodding is, then what can we really talk about? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I love the tropes that come with a monster romance. Like, they're usually just so cringy and wonderful, like fated mates. Love it. I love a fated mate. There's always a kiss. Usually there's much, much more, which is even better. Shout out Ice Planet Barbarians, just a series that has taken my world by storm. Yeah. What was the one that we read, Carlos? Oh, Tentacles and Triathlons.
Yeah.
It is what it sounds like.
Get in My Swamp by my favorite GM fairy. Like,
what's the B one called?
Bad Behavior.
Oh my god,
where he literally turns from a little bee to like a full grown man bee that's fuzzy. Yeah, but Rose also gave Get in My Swamp 5 stars. Don't think you looking down over.
Listen,
there
I get it.
That is crazy.
It's just, the books like this are so campy and hot and fun. Like, I never finish it and be like, wow, what a bad time. I always am so happy. Yeah. Like, I'm always just like, where's the next one in the series? And the crazier they get, the more I'm along for the ride. So, monster smut, monster romance, represent.
Wow.
Love it.
We're all just like really switching gears from each other, because I'm going to go from monster smut to YA thriller. So I chose The Naturals by Jennifer Lynn Barnes. You would think I would choose The Inheritance Games, but no, I feel like The natural just represents. I know, Carlos, I know how you feel, but I just love.
Maybe I should read The Naturals. Maybe I would like The Naturals.
It's so good. It's literally, it's marketed as Criminal Minds, but make it YA, and that's literally what it is.
Right, right.
Like a group of teenagers plucked from their situations, which were mostly not great home situations, and they have some type of gift. And so the FBI kind of has them live in this house where they're using their gifts kind of on like cold cases and things like that, but they actually have to be brought in for an active case. And it's just literally so good. It's fast paced. It's YA thriller.
Wait, that actually sounds really good.
You have to read it. And the one thing I love about YA thrillers is they have like, they still have the teenage drama. There's always a love triangle, always, which I know iffy, but I feel like YA love triangles are just like, I don't know, you like to root for who you want, kind of like in Twilight.
Oh, I'm number one. I am the number one YA love triangle defender. I could write like a thesis on a love triangle. I think they're super important.
Yes.
But I think they're really important in YA literature because they represent like two versions of the main character. It's like, what path do you want to choose? Who do you want to be? What traits do you value in yourself? What traits do you value in your partner? And in the exploration of self that should be occurring in a young adult novel, I think it's so important. I think they make, it makes so much sense as a trope in young adult literature. I will die on this 7,000 times. Pro YA love triangle forever.
I agree.
I do appreciate it in YA. And in adult, I find myself straying further from it just because, like you said, like those developmental years, like when you're choosing between, you know, your paths and stuff like that, it makes so much more sense than when you're a full-blown adult and you're like, who am I? I mean, you can still have those, like, I guess, existential crises, whatever, but like, I don't know. For me, it just feels more right at that younger level.
Yeah
because like Katniss isn't choosing who she wants to, you know, love. She's not choosing between Gale and Peeta. She's choosing who she wants to be. Like, am I going to give into my rage, or am I going to let this world like make me softer? That's like her fundamental choice.
Do I want a warrior, or do I want to make bread? I want to make bread.
I'm also a Gale defender, which is an even worse opinion, but I love Peeta forever, but I will defend Gale.
Low-key I was too though, so I kind of relate.
Oh. He didn't mean to kill her sister, you guys. It was a mistake.
That is so crazy. Peeta. Wow. I'm a Peeta lover. Okay.
I'm a Peeta lover too. How could you not be?
I love him. I love the bread. I love all of it.
Soft boy.
Gale. Hot take. Hot take for the Gale defender.
I've got bad opinions. I had bad taste all around as a teenager. I had bad taste in boyfriends. I had bad taste in book boyfriends. It was like a circle of life thing.
Development.
Look where we are now. It's fine.
My husband's so sweet.
I was going to say, yeah, your husband now is wonderful. He's so
great. The nicest man alive.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Okay, my next category is emotionally devastating lit fic. So I chose Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. But I'd also include in this Atonement, Circe, My Dark Vanessa, anything that makes me feel like my heart has been scooped out and laid out on the floor in front of me is something that I would put in this category. I read Never Let Me Go in college, and I just remember making me feel like I had like thrown up my own heart. It leaves you hollowed out, but it's written in this really like kind of weird, removed way. And most of what I read is YA and romance, and so I wasn't used to that level of detachment in a narrator, and I think that the artistic choices you can get away with in lit fic, which I don't read that often, are always like really fascinating to me. So yeah, Never Let Me Go, also a good movie adaptation starring like a young cute Andrew Garfield.
Ooh,
that's my Spider-Man right there.
If you have ever seen like a Marauders era Remus Lupin TikTok, they have pulled the stills from Never Let Me Go.
Oh.
So him looking like tortured and wearing suspenders, that's Never Let Me Go.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
And I will not spoil what it's about unless you want me to, but it's vaguely dystopian.
Oh, you can spoil.
Yeah.
We love spoilers.
Do you want me to tell you the premise?
Yes.
So Never Let Me Go, it takes place at this like very beautiful pastoral English boarding school, and you don't really know what time period it is, and it's a group of three best friends, two boys and a girl. The girl is Kathy, and she's the narrator, if I recall correctly. It's been a couple of years since I read this book. in the entire book, they're being, you know, educated and trained for their special purpose and these really special lives they're going to live. And that's why it's so important that, you know, they take their schooling really seriously and they go on weekend trips to the seaside and it's all very beautiful. And then the twist at the end is that they're all clones who have been raised to replace other people's organs.
Wait, that's kind of sick.
I love that.
And so the end is like, you know, Kathy, who spent this entire book, like, you know, being in love with her male best friends in a sprawling green field, like going into a hospital room to have her liver removed to like give to her clone somewhere in London.
Damn.
Wait, that's so cool.
And these people are just like chopped up for parts until they die to like save their...
Wait, I'm definitely watching this movie.
Me too.
The movie's... I remember like sobbing.
Really?
Because it's not shot like a sci-fi or a dystopian. It's shot like an Andrew Garfield early 2000s love story.
Looking up the cover for the book, it looks like I've definitely seen this. But I didn't know that that's what it was.
Oh, definitely. That's what
yeah.
It's out at the store. Like,
it's been out for probably 20 years. I would say it's like entering the classic canon.
So when reading it, did it, the plot twist kind of have that same like awe factor as like I'm sure the movie probably does?
I have not read it since college. I remember it being more of like a creeping sense of like you as the reader start to realize what's going on before the characters do. And so it's this mounting sense of dread of like, oh no, honey, you're not going to go get to live with that boy. Oh, the special purpose isn't good, sweetie. I remember it being like you as the reader kind of get it and they don't.
Oh, okay. I kind of love that though.
That sounds so good.
Maybe that'll be one of my picks.
Oh, no, then I'm going to sob. I specifically avoid books that I know are going to make me like cry, and I know, even knowing the premise, I'm going to sob.
Or you guys will hate it and be like,
Okay, my turn.
Yes.
Okay, I actually don't know specifically why I picked this, but I saw it and I was like, okay, I have to okay. Go for it. I don't think I've ever really talked about it on the podcast either. It is Black Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse.
I don't think I've heard you talk about this that much.
It's really good. It's set in like pre-Columbian America. So the very beginning, the very first chapter, so it's not really spoilers, but there's like a mom and a kid, and the mom carves a crow into the kid's chest and like wings on his back. She sews his eyes and his mouth shut, and then she jumps off a cliff.
Wow.
And that's like the very first chapter.
Did I read this book? Oh my gosh.
It's so good. But honestly, the darkness doesn't really continue on after that. That's like the darkest you get. And you kind of just follow this guy that's kind of like the chosen one, but you don't know if he's the chosen one because he's going to save the world or because he's going to destroy it.
Ooh.
And throughout the book, you start kind of figuring out. It also has three main characters, two of them female, one male. And then one of them is like a siren kind of. And then the other one is like on the opposite side of the guy. They're kind of like enemies. But yeah, I don't know specifically why I chose it. Like, I don't think it falls into any specific category.
Yeah, like what genre is it technically? Because I mean, it's shelved in fantasy.
Yeah, it's technically fantasy, like slash dark fantasy.
It's just calling to you.
I feel like you guys are so good at like explaining plots and stuff like that. And I'm like, there's a girl and she likes to do this one thing. Kind of. I don't know. I feel like I'm just so bad at explaining.
I feel the same way.
I also feel the same way.
I don't know. But on to mine. Butcher and Blackbird, baby.
Wow. Oh,
I still can't believe Rose didn't love it.
It's so crazy to me.
It's so rose-coated. Like,
I know it's very rose-coated.
I am using this one to represent my taste in romance and horror. This just really hits both just so well for me, which is why it's so crazy that the romance aspect just didn't hit for Rose. Because you liked the horror
aspect,
right?
Yeah, I did like the horror part of it.
So yeah, basically just Butcher and Blackbird, two serial killers that cross paths, and they decide that, you know, they like each other's company. So in order to see each other at least once a year, they do this little game where they're going to go after the same bad person to see who can serial murder him first, him or her first. And, you know, this blossoming love story as well of both of them just wanting to take each other's clothes off. The romance wasn't like the most well done ever, I will say that, but like it just still scratched a certain itch in my brain that I just did really enjoy. And the gore was so crazy, but as I've learned about myself, I do.
You like gore.
Is it appropriate to say I love that? I don't know. But I do. So yeah, the extreme, not really like extreme horror, but just like the horror aspect, the gore, blood, guts, all that kind of jazz, mixed with a little bit of, you know, cringy romance.
Yeah, I love that.
Hater.
Sorry, I'm sorry. My next book kind of encompasses a cluster of things. And some of the things that I cluster into this might not make sense, but I'll try my best to explain. So my book for this is The Harbinger of Vengeance by John Athen. Lauren, I told you about this book. Maybe you'll remember once I start explaining. It's about a man now, but he was extremely bullied in high school. And present day, he's going to take revenge on his bully.
Boy, does yeah, he.
This is an extreme horror. So this kind of, I love extreme horror. I love like the gore, the outrageousness, the ridiculousness, because like you really have to suspend your disbelief. Like they don't feel super real. And that's why I think I like it. Like if it felt too realistic, then I don't know if I would love that gore. But the fact that it's just so crazy that something like those things would happen is like, what?
Almost like a Saw movie.
Exactly.
Where like those things that happen, you're just like, it's so crazy that your brain almost has to be like, yeah, no, this is just so not real.
Exactly. And so what I'm clustering in with my extreme horror of The Harbinger of Vengeance is like monster smut that I like Shrek. Get in my swamp,
girl.
Listen, what? Stick with me. The outrageousness, like, when you're reading something and you just think to yourself, what am I even doing right now? Like, I just love that feeling. Me, I'm going to bring it up, guys. I was always going to bring it up. Me reading Zodiac Academy. It's in this cluster. Listen. It gives me that feeling of like, what am I reading? You love it. Come on. So.
I hate it.
Do not love.
That was my pick for right now.
What a wild connection that you just made.
To me, it makes sense, okay?
I'm glad it does to somebody.
It's my opinion.
True. You know, you connect those dots, girly. You connect them. Sasha?
Okay, my final category is what I am calling deeply messed up horror light. Unlike Rose, I cannot do the gore, but I like a weird psychological horror. So the book I've chosen for this is House of Hollow by Crystal Sutherland.
Yes!
I love House of Hollow.
I read it in a day just because I had to figure out what the hell was going on. So for those of you who have not read it, it's kind of a contemporary horror light. I don't know exactly where it's shelved, but it's a YA novel about three sisters who go missing as children on a holiday as a family in Scotland on New Year's Eve. And they show back up 2 weeks later. I don't know, like sometime later. And all of a sudden their brown hair is white blonde and their eyes are jet black. and they have no memory of where they were. And they're really weird. Like the mom will find them sitting together with their heads like chanting in the middle of the night. They're like ravenously hungry. The mom has to like hide the cat food because the kids are just like shoveling it into their mouths. And so House of Hollow starts when the youngest sister is in high school. The two oldest are in their early 20s. And the oldest sister, who is now a famous model because these girls are like weird and beguiling, goes missing. And the youngest sister starts to suspect that maybe what took them as children has come back for them. And it is so good. And she sticks the landing. I think with a premise like that, oftentimes authors kind of hand wave at the end of like, oh, it was a dream. Like, I don't know, it's just like not satisfying. Her explanation for where these girls were and what happened to them is so concrete and so satisfying and so creepy. I just loved it. So the books that I've included in this category are Year of the Witching by Alexis Henderson, Grace Year by Kim Liggett, A Study in Drowning, Wilder Girls by Rory Power, and Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo.
And I love the unsuspecting, like, side character boyfriend that becomes so prominent as well. He was so
He's like a
funny.
Himbo model.
Yes, I loved it. And, like, I think his name was, like, Tyler, and I was like, I didn't think he was going to be such a prominent character towards the end, but he really is, and I loved all of his page time. Like, he was wonderful.
He was fun. I love a sister relationship. I have her next book. It's a standalone, but I think that I will love it, but I loved House of Hollow so much that I'm, like, afraid to read her next book. It's one of those. Like, I loved it that much.
I have the arc of it. Is it the Invocations?
Yeah, the Invocations, yeah. Another great cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does give very House of Hollow. I wonder if it's the same, like, illustrator. It looks similar to me.
It's also, like, at this point in my career, I know most other YA authors. And I'm friendly with most. Like, I love, you know, my colleagues. Like, it's great and it's so fun to read my friend's books. But I don't know Crystal Sutherland or anything about her. She lives in the UK. And so it's such a rare treat to be like, I don't know anything about you. We've never hung out at a conference. Like, just going in reading something like I did when I was a teenager is such a treat. Which, not, again, not to say that I don't love reading my friends' books, because I do, but it is such a different experience to be like, you have no idea who I am. Like, I love, this is like, I'm just going in so blind as a reader.
And I'm curious for you, like, because I know for myself, sometimes it can be hard to read my friends' books because I always want to read it in their voice. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense, do you find yourself having to, like, really try not to do that?
It's, I don't know, kind of depends on the book and it depends on the friend. For friends that I'm really close to, I'll definitely hear it in their voice. And then there's other people that I'm just like, oh my God, this is so good. I want to text them about that. which is fun. But it is not the same reading experience as, like, picking up something, you know, not knowing anything about the book.
Right.
Or sometimes something so messed up, I'm like, gosh, should I check on that? But I've definitely had friends tell me they read my work in my voice, or that they'll forget it's me, and then a line will pop up, and they'll be like, oh, that's so Sasha. And they'll, like, remember that it's me.
Maybe mood boards will help me better, like, feel less connected to it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anywho. Carlos.
Oh, my last pick. Okay. So it is still a fantasy. Are we surprised?
No. No.
But this one has more of a horror and mystery element to it. And I do love my horror and mysteries, which is, I've told you guys to read this before as well, and you guys haven't yet.
Call us out.
The Bone Shard Daughter.
Damn. Definitely. Yeah.
It's this, you follow this girl that lost her memories. She's heir to the throne, basically, but she lost her memories. So now she's trying to find a way to get them back. But she's also fighting her stepbrother because he's also trying to take the throne. So whoever can, like, pass the test or whatever will become the next emperor. And then you follow. So it's hard to explain because there's five main characters. There's five POVs. There's, like, basically a rebellion happening against the emperor, and as the secrets unfold, you kind of don't know who to side with, especially because the main character, she is the emperor's daughter. So it's kind of like it's like push and pull between, like, who's doing the right thing and who isn't. But then there's also some horror aspects with the magic. It's bone shard magic. So they take bones from little kids and they use them to create constructs, which are like animals that are, like, placed together, and they are all under the emperor's command. And he, like, has them throughout, like, the different cities in his empire. And yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to explain. I feel like it's better to go into it without knowing anything about it, especially because the twist at the end is crazy. It's so good.
And is that another one that's, like, ginormous?
It's 430.
Oh, pretty good size.
That's my final pick.
I would not be who I am without Red Queen. I mean,
of course.
Honestly, same.
I don't know. The Red Queen is just, it just hits so many of my favorite things. Like the choosing between brothers aspect, the tortured villain that you just love to hate, but also love. Mare is your main character, and she ends up having to go undercover in this kingdom because she's got red blood in a world of silver-blooded, I guess, elitists, you could say. And usually the silver bloods are the only people with powers. And Mare finds out that as a red-blooded person, she also has powers. She can control lightning. Very, very fourth wing. And so she just, and the hair thing, right?
Wait, remember when we talked about this during the fourth wing episode?
Oh, that's right.
How it's literally just a copy of Red Queen.
Yeah, because Mare has, it's like, she has like streaks of the silver in her hair, just like, just like Violet. Yeah. Oh, just so good. I loved this series so much. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe reading it brand new as an adult, I might have different feelings about it, but I feel like reading it in high school, or whenever this, when did this come out?
February 10th, 2015.
Yeah. So my brain was still baking. I was like, this is literature right here. I was like, this is just my favorite thing in the whole wide world. So yeah, Red Queen is my final pick because it's just, it is a part of my personality, I think, at this point in my life. So
that's the book that made me feel like I could be a writer, because Victoria, who I now know and is like lovely, but she did all these interviews and she was like posting on Tumblr, and I was posting on Tumblr. It's 2015. And she was posting like, I just graduated from college. When I wrote Red Queen, I went home to my parents' house and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And so I decided to write a YA novel because I really like YA novels and I just felt like I could do it. And then, you know, it blew up and it was this big thing and she got all the success. And at the moment I was reading those interviews, I had just graduated from college and I was sitting in my parents' house being like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I like YA novels. And I felt like because she did it and she sounded like me, where she's like a year or two older than me, then I could at least try to do it. I feel like I was waiting for somebody to give me permission. And I feel like her being like, yeah, I was depressed right after college, I was like, oh my God, that's me. I guess I can write a book. And I started The Witch Haven.
She really is just like a lovely person who just seems like she's so supportive and so real. I feel like just even through her social media, I've only had the pleasure of meeting her a few times, but like she, you can just tell that she's like no bullshit real person. And I feel like that bleeds through in the characters that she writes as well. At least like the main character Mare, I feel like is kind of similar to how she like speaks or whatever. So
my theory is, for better or for worse, the first protagonist you ever write ends up being a lot like you. As much as you try to fight it, your first protagonist is always you.
Yes. Miss Rosa Pose, what's your last choice? I'm scared.
My last one. Don't be scared. It's calm. The most extreme one was my last pick. Yeah. I guess making this list, I realized that I just love YA more than I thought, and I feel like I read so much of it and I love like the tropes in YA. So it is The Weight of Blood by Tiffany D. Jackson, which I have also talked about to people so many times because that book just represents so many things. It's like basically a Carrie retelling, reimagining, whichever one is the correct word to use in that situation. But it tackles like racism, living in a small town, dealing with your identity, like being half black, half white, like I don't even know what to call myself, I don't know what to identify with, so like finding who you are, female rage, vengeance, like magical realism, but like in horror, which I love. And I feel like also Josh Malerman, who wrote Bird Box, he also does that kind of thing where it's like, there's some type of magical element to this, but it's still horror. And it's just so, I don't know, perfect to me.
And so that's what it is, just like kind of a Carrie.
Yeah, it's literally a Carrie retelling, but make Carrie a mixed girl living in a small southern town, being raised by her white grandpa, who's like nobody can know who you are. And one day her hair gets wet while she's outside because I think it starts raining and everybody sees her curly hair. And obviously living in this small town, you know, they have their own biases, prejudices, and she starts getting bullied. And her also coming into her, like her powers and things, realizing, you know, so it's just so good. It's so good.
That okay. I feel like all the books that we've chosen really are like
us.
Good with our taste. Yeah. I really do believe that. I was struggling so much. I was like, should we do 10 instead? Like, I don't know. This was very important to me to like represent myself correctly.
I was going to also put Blood Over Brighthaven with like kind of in like that Poppy War type of category where it's like dark academia, but it's fantasy, but it's like epic. There's a war, strong female character that's also morally gray. Like, I also love that too. So maybe that's like my little bonus. My bonus category.
I've named like 30 books. So.
I know, I'm kicking myself that I didn't do something similar.
Yeah.
You found the cheat code.
I know, you having your categories was like perfect.
I also just realized I didn't pick any YA.
I feel like that's very, yeah, that's very on brand for you.
Well, I like YA sometimes.
Yeah, but you like your YA to be darker. Like, you still, I would say you like your YA more like the new age category. Darker themes, because like Darkness Outside Us, definitely not like a super light, happy.
Fair. True.
Yeah. Because my bonus book was going to be the one that I just read, The Road of Bones by Demi Winters.
Oh, it's the one you were just talking about earlier, the Viking one.
It definitely has like a sense of ACOTAR, but make it Vikings.
We had a whole episode on it, but I hated the first one right from the beginning. It was so bad. But I'm glad I read the second and the third one because it did get better.
Should we all read Throne of Glass? Sasha, have you read Throne of Glass?
I really want to read Throne of Glass.
I sure have.
Is it good?
It is good. I will. The first one she wrote when she was a teenager on like, it wasn't Wattpad, but it was like an online. And it's clear that she read it when she was a teenager. And so having read ACOTAR, and if you guys have read Crescent City, like, you see that she's had so much growth as an author. So it's not a bad book, but it feels very juvenile because she literally wrote it when she was a teenager. Again, kind of like ACOTAR, I think you have to get through it. And then by the time you get to the later books, she was writing those at the same time she was writing like Court of Mist and Fury and the first Crescent City. And so they level up so much. It's almost a Harry Potter thing where the first one starts very YA. And by the end, you're reading like a full adult fantasy. But she does kind of the same thing that she does in ACOTAR, which I really love when she does, where, you know, you're introduced to like these hunky dudes and you think that that's a love interest. And you're not actually meeting, you know, the true love interests until like three or four books in.
Mm. Oh, I love that.
That's pretty cool.
There's so many characters that I feel like a lot of people are like, oh my God, I love this storyline, but this storyline I could take or leave. Mm-hmm. So you're like flipping through. But I think as like a magnum opus, it is an astounding piece of work. Just like the amount of world building she juggled, watching somebody write from, you know, 18 to their 30s in this singular world. Like, as a writer, I'm really fascinated by it. I think if you liked ACOTAR, it is worth reading. But I don't know, just I think like ACOTAR, there's going to be parts you really love and parts that you're like, okay, can we hurry it along?
Yeah.
I like it. I like the main character less than I do Feyre.
Oh, really? That's a hot take.
But there's some side characters that I really love. I really love Dorian. I really love Manon. She's got like a mean witch. She's got a prince with an attitude problem.
Very, very Cardin. I love that.
Very Cardin.
Did you read Crescent City and all that stuff too?
I sure. I've been on a big Sarah J. Maas binge lately, actually. I read ACOTAR and Throne of Glass as they were coming out. Crescent City I'd avoided because I was very intimidated by them. I don't often read adult fantasy. I don't feel like I have the attention span for it, and the world building is really intimidating to me. And I'd heard that the world building in Crescent City was intimidating, that it took a little while to get into, and so I was apprehensive. But the third one came out, and I'd heard that it fed into the ACOTAR universe.
Right.
And that's how she got me. And so I binged all three of them. And I also think maybe reading them on my Kindle, I like tricked myself because I wasn't reading like a brick.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
I think that ACOTAR is still my favorite of her series. But gosh, the ability to write like a 700-page book that I am flying through is
right.
like a real skill mm-hmm. as a writer. I have my quibbles, but like all in all, I had a blast.
I do want to read Throne of Glass.
I honestly, if you're on the fence, I probably would do Throne of Glass before Crescent City. But at that point, if like you're still having fun with Throne of Glass, you got three mm-hmm. more. They're all, I think they're going to all start to feed into Throne of Glass too.
I mean, that would be very on brand for her.
There's one little clue at the end of Crescent City. This does not feel like a big spoiler, where one character is like, and his full name is, and it's like the name of somebody in Throne of Glass. And so I feel like we're going to start to get more like Multiverse of Madness. Sarah J. Maas's extended universe stuff.
I mean, what a genius thing to do, though, because now it's like basically forcing people like, well, if you want to be on the inside of this, you got to read my other series too. Like, that is just...
Well, it's like Sanderson as well with his Cosmere works. Mm-hmm. I think in the... I don't know. I haven't read the Sunlit Men is his newest book that came out. And I think there's like hints of the Mistborns having a war with the Knight's Radiance from the Stormlight Archives, but it's like sci-fi. It's like way in the future.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Spoiler, light spoilers for Crescent City. The final line of the second book is, you know, she's fighting and she falls, like, you just don't know who she is, and it's been really terrible, and there's been a battle, and then she like falls through something, she like lands in a field, and the final line of the second Crescent City book is, hello, my name is Rhysand.
That's what got me.
Crazy.
It was electric.
Fuck, well, now I have to read these books. Like, I love him the way I love
him. I could do a whole other episode on the Crescent City books, but the last that I'll say about it is the world building in the first book was intimidating to me as somebody who doesn't read a lot of adult fantasy. As people who read adult fantasy, you guys would probably be like, this is nothing. My advice is let it wash over you. If it's important, it will be repeated. And it is worth it because that book has the singular greatest climax that I've read in probably 10 years.
Wow.
And I don't yet, like, I don't think it's a perfect book, whatever. I don't think any book is a perfect book, but like the buildup towards that climax, it is all worth it. It is in every single little element through the book ends up mattering in that final scene.
Interesting.
In a way that is just like masterful.
And that's just in the first book?
That's the first book.
Well, maybe that's our homework. We'll do a SJM deep dive, and then we'll have you back on to just absolutely delve into it.
Oh my god. I reread A Court of Silver Flames last night.
Oh really?
Because not the whole book. Okay, like, oh my god. I think the ability to write a book that is that propulsive and that fun, you know, books like Sarah J. Maas, books like Fourth Wing, books like Twilight, that get so shit on, one, because I think their audience is primarily women, but these books that you cannot put down, it's such a skill as a writer, and I'm in awe of people who can do it, because that's the feeling that I'm always chasing as a writer and as a reader. Mm-hmm. So I think for every, like, but this little element didn't make sense, I'm like, yeah, but were you having fun? Because that's more impressive to me.
Yeah, because even I've read a few things where I've even been, like, hate reading it, mm-hmm. and that to me is still such an interesting concept, because it's like I am actively not enjoying my time, yet there's something that is keeping me here just by absolute chokehold for mm-hmm. whatever reason. And like, oh, I know that that's how Rose's Zodiac addiction came to head.
Because it's just so entertaining. Like, you just can't put it down. Some things are just so bingeable that you just... I can't stop. Whether I like what's happening or not, I just, you have to keep going. Like, there's something in your brain where you're like, I can't put it down. It's kind of when you're doing like your doom scroll and on TikTok. Like, you know in your head, I need to go do something. I need to put my phone down. But like, you can't. You just keep going. That's what those books are.
And I'm definitely not hate reading Sarah. I genuinely love Sarah J. Maas. But it's like, but yeah, those kind of books, they're like, but the world building didn't even make sense. And you're like, yeah, but did it even matter to you when you were reading? Because I'm so impressed that like they make you care so much.
Right. Especially in Fourth Wing. I was like, but when they had sex, she like ruined that room with her lightning. And that was crazy, wasn't it?
And again, a book I genuinely love and think is like skillfully written. But my joke about Fourth Wing is like, you know how a society needs three things: soldiers, other soldiers, and librarians. Like, end of list. Yes. It's like, where are you? Do you guys have farmers? But I don't even care. I don't even care because I'm having so much fun.
Yes. That is one of my favorite kinds of books is when, like, it is very obviously not, like, a masterful, just, like, you know, but you're just, oh, it's just so, like you said, bingeable. You're just having such a good time. And it's, like, that's one of my favorite things.
I feel like it's just really accessible for people that are maybe not, like, everyday readers, too, and pulling in that audience, like, oh, this is something I don't read, like, maybe I read, like, 2-3 books a year. I can read this, and it doesn't feel overwhelming, and you just feel, like, a sense of accomplishment, too. So I feel like the accessibility of the writing, it's not such intense world building to where somebody's like, I can't do this, you know? So I think that's also what it is. Like, you feel, like, I don't know, like, it's easy for you, you know?
100%. Yeah, I totally agree.
And also, any book that goes viral that, like, pulls in more readers, I love that. Like, if we can just get more people reading and involved in the conversation, like, I will talk your ear off about books. Like, and if more people can join that conversation, like, whatever book that looks like to them, to get them into it, like, I love that.
Well, I've had a couple of people message me being like, your book got me out of a book slump, or your book got me into reading, mm-hmm. or your book got me into reading fantasy. And those are the highest possible compliments. Because I know those books for me. It's like, we're taking it back to the episode. It's the books in the episode. Like, I know that those books feel so special. And so to be able to elicit that feeling, even once, is like the craziest thing in the world.
Have you gotten someone tattoo something on their body Ooh. For your books yet?
I have had people ask me permission to get tattooed, and I've had people tell me they're going to get tattooed, but I've never seen one. Ooh. So I don't know. I've had people come through my signing line and, like, had me write stuff because they want to get tattooed in my handwriting, which I'm like,
wow.
Don't. You're too ugly.
It's a lot of pressure.
So much pressure. I also, like, I hope I never do anything terrible, but, like, what if I get canceled? Like, that's no. Like, I think and I hope that I have, like, a strong moral compass, but, like, right. You just don't know.
10 years down the road, people are going to be playing this clip. She knew she was going to get canceled.
It's a lot of faith in me. So, yes, I've had people tell me they're going to get tattoos, but I've never seen them. So if they exist, I would love to see them. But
yeah. I feel like that would be such a bucket list thing for me, is, like, just have someone love my work so much that they want to get it, like, tattooed. I don't know. Is that
That's
weird?
Probably. Sick.
No, I mean, it's definitely cool when people tell me. I'm very flattered, but I'm also like, oh, are you sure?
Yeah, you go mom mode. You're like, it's permanent.
That's exactly how I feel. That's exactly how I feel.
Well, does anyone else have any last minute bookish things to throw in the pot?
Rose barking out winter 2025.
Yes. Oh. Plug all your things. Where can people find please. You on, like, Instagram, all that jazz?
Oh, gosh, I'm at Sasha Payton Smith on Instagram. I'm at Sasha P. Smith on TikTok for as long as they let us have that. I'm SashaPSmith.com if you want to check out my website. I have 2 books out now. I have a completed duology called The Witch Haven. The sequel is The Witch Hunt, about a school for witches in 1911 New York. And I have a forthcoming series called The Rose Bargain, about a bride competition among a bunch of debutantes in Victorian England, where the queen is an evil fairy. And I'm still learning how to pitch that one because I haven't really had to pitch it yet. And there's a lot of moving parts.
No,
in that
it
one.
Sounds so interesting. Like, it sounds interesting. Even just the way you said it, yeah.
And I know we talked about it in our last episode with, like, tropes and stuff, but, like, if anybody out there loves just, like, the magic school or boarding school trope, which, you know, whatever. Is it a trope? Is it a,
it's a trope.
Part
yeah.
of a plot? Yeah, like, you will love her duology that's out right now. So just putting that out there for the world.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. Yes, it was so fun.
Thank you for having me. I've had a blast.
Of course. I'm glad that people got to know you not just by the books that you have written, but by, you know, your other tastes and things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can find me at Lauren H. Writes on Instagram and on YouTube under Read Anything Good.
You can find me on Instagram at Kingsom of Books, and now I've been live streaming on YouTube playing Woo-hoo! Video games under Carlos Kings. So yeah, I plan on doing more of those live streams.
And you can find me on Instagram and YouTube at Flower Reads a Lot, and our podcast Control Your Shelf anywhere where you get your podcasts, and on Instagram at Control Your Shelf _pod.
Yep.
Okay.
Nailed it.